Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, which brews beers that are highly rated by beer critics and beer lovers alike. More at gooseisland.com. We don't need to be the only beer you drink. We just want to be the best beer you drink.
This is Sound Opinions, and Greg, when people ask us who one of our all-time favorite guests has been coming in to talk and perform, we often have John Bryan on the list. We thought we'd revisit one of our favorite interviews ever. John Bryan came in 2006, recorded in our studio, talked with us, played some music in front of a small audience. We both knew his resume inside out. He's been a great producer. Fiona Apple, Amy Mann, Elliot Smith, Rufus Wainwright, you know, Spoon, Kanye West. How do you produce Kanye West? He's been a wonderful film, not only composer, but collaborator, working on Magnolia and Punch Drunk Love and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. He's a multi-instrumentalist, hardly anything he can't play. He's a sought-after session musician, and he's made some music on his own as a solo artist, Meaningless, in 2000.
Jim, he has also taken up a residency in Los Angeles over the years at a great club called Largo, where I've seen his set, you know, four or five times, and it's always a marvel. These improvised sets, the audience is calling out any song they can think of. You know, play a Captain and Tennille song. You know, he'll do an incredible version of a Captain and Tennille song, or you know, something more contemporary. You know, an Amy Mann track that he may have produced. He'll do it. He'll do Queen. He'll do Cheap Trick. He's amazing in that regard. And he could play it in numerous styles. He's conversant with everything from jazz and Dixieland to soul, R&B, pop, you name it, he can play it. There's instruments all across the stage. It's like a toy shop up there. And he's just jumping around. And then he'll actually do tracks in real time. He'll lay down a drum part, then a bass, and, you know, record them, loop them, and then add and add and add until you've got this almost orchestral sound going up on stage. So I started off by asking John about that ongoing residency at Largo. These shows are legendary. It used to be musicians would show up to play with John late in the evening, and, you know, Robin Hitchcock's in town, they'd show up and play with John. You know, Amy Mann would drop in, Michael Penn. But pretty soon people just started to come to see John because it was like a Grateful Dead show, except better. I don't think there's ever been a show that you've done twice. I mean, it's been a different show every night.
Yeah, I can't make any qualitative judgment of, you know, my show versus the Grateful Dead, but I assume there are less people on acid in the audience. That's the one thing I know. That, too, is an assumption. So.
Yes, kind of a new generation version of the longstanding residency that Les Paul would have every week in New York.
Very much so.
You know, and people in New York would go to see Les, and you never know who would be on stage. I mean, sometimes it would be Jimmy Page playing with him.
Yeah, really an amazing thing. Now, you ended the shows a few months ago because of a little tendonitis issue. Mm-hmm. I've heard tell of that last show, you basically did the entire show left-handed.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Including playing the drums.
And the guitar, right?
Yeah, well, which is not, that's sort of not the hard one. And nor is piano, because, you know, you're used to using this limb anyway. Mm-hmm. But getting a bit busier with the left hand to fill in some of the space started to get hectic. The guitar was the sort of fun one to try and get through, which I just stepped on lots of pedals so it would sustain, and it was just like some very bad histrionic, you know.
Everything
70s
goes,
guitar.
Everything goes better with fuzz. All right, so I think that the way that you do the show is fascinating. You will start by playing a groove on the drums. And you sample that. When you hit your stride, you click off the sample and that loops. And you move over to the piano, and you get a little piano thing going, you sample a stretch of it, and that loops. And then you'll move over to guitar and vocals, add that on top of it. There are other times, I guess, where you add even other things in.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I mean,
just
great.
Anything to amuse myself.
So a one-man band, courtesy of electronics, that you set up and then augment.
That's what I've been told. From lack of evaluation, things are changing. guess the fun of it for people is just seeing the process. I think there are a lot of things as a musician that, you know, we take for granted that are interesting to other people. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the first time anybody ever talks into a mic and there's echo on it, it's an astounding moment. I've never seen a human who experienced that for the first time who didn't go like, oh my God, that's incredible, incredible, incredible. It's there again. Oh my God. But you forget, you know, it's just another, it's like a, you know, hammer or a screwdriver to a musician. It's just another part of the toolkit. Like, I don't know, I just started getting really bored going to see bands, two guitar, bass, drums, play their 45-minute set in the same order they played it, usually with the same in-between song banter. And the interesting moment I would always see at gigs, and, you know, when I talk to most people, they usually agree. The night that the PA goes down and there's 5 minutes of awkwardness and then suddenly they just go sit at the front of the stage with some acoustic guitars mm-hmm. and play for what people can hear them, that's the thing you remember. It's the things that were forced to happen by chance that lodge in your memory. So my whole gig has been based around that and not being afraid to show the process. And building the thing with the loopers is that. It's sort of like, well, it's an opportunity for people to get to see essentially how records are made.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, in a way, does sort of keep me in a line of tradition with somebody like Les Paul, who used to do a live demonstration of how he overdubbed.
Yeah.
We play the first part on the guitar. All this right. is the rhythm part. Goes, all right, I'll play the second part to this.
I mean, I used to go see Les Paul all the time in New York 20 years ago, and, you know, he did every Monday night, and there was something really beautiful about that. So all those things sort of coalesced into what Fridays became.
To the silver screen, but the film is a saddening bore. Cause she wrote it 10 times and more. She can sit in the eyes of fools as asking to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall.
And the mastery of all the instruments, too. You know, a lot of people don't
mastery
realize...
Mastery is a bit of an overstatement.
Well, you know, I got to say, when Macy Gray, you know, how many Grammys did she win for that first album? A lot of people don't realize, like, I think he played everything on that record, basically.
Oh, no, that's completely untrue. No, it is. I mean, you know, I'm one of a number of session musicians. I mean, yeah, I played on most of that record and mm-hmm. maybe a number of instruments per song, but not...
Well,
not all of them
I've
by
heard the
any
story.
Means.
I've heard the real story, and they say everybody's saying Brian made that record, basically.
No, that's complete bullshit. Andy Slater, you can bleep that. No, I was just I was a session musician on it. I didn't produce. Andy Slater did a great job on that mm-hmm. record. I hear that a lot. Like, if I'm around on some record, somebody's like, well, you actually produced that, and you wrote all those songs, and you pressed the record yourself in some strange, you know, factory you have that you don't let anybody into. But I think there are just assumptions that get made way too quickly. Like, God, you know, it's one that really absolutely blew my mind was when I produced the second Fiona Apple record, a big fan of hers came up and talked to me. It was... so happy and going, oh man, this is the record, you know, we were sort of hoping as fans she would make. This is great. I'm like, oh wow, I'm glad to hear that. It's beautiful. And he goes, so he started bringing up specific things in songs, and he goes like, oh, and Fast as You Can, when it goes to halftime, that was you, right? That's your idea. I'm like, no, that's how she wrote it, and it was just translating.
Fast as you can, baby, scratch me off.
That's what she wrote. I didn't change a note of what she wrote. And, you know, I think finally I got a little bit cranky with somebody and just sort of having to say, you know, it's not like I go in and it's like, let me fix this. The people I choose to work with are people I'm interested in learning from and and being around. And I mean, for me, I get this beautiful view of watching my favorite artists work because I'm there. But the assumption, I think because of the, you know, the classic archetype, the myth of the mad scientist, which people just sort of stencil on top of me because I play a bunch of instruments. They say, well, it's a Prince thing. He does everything. And he's like Phil Spector and puts the gun at their head and tells them how to phrase things, and which really turned out to have some very bad ramifications later.
Yes.
And it's just not the case. I mean, I feel like I've gotten to be around incredibly talented people. And my version of doing my job well, the best example I've ever found is there's an old Twilight Zone episode of an old man walking around with like one of those cigarette trays, and he's walking through a diner and he's trying to sell knickknacks and people aren't buying.
Are you kidding, old timer? What would I need?
He'd walk over to one person and go,
I'll tell you what you need. This is what you need. It's yours. No charge tonight.
And it was spot remover. And the guy was like, you know, get away from me, old man. I don't need that. And the guy would walk out of the room and the guy would suddenly spill coffee on his tie and, you know, look up and the music would go.
Yeah.
To me, that's the essence of what I try to do. You try and fill only the spaces which aren't getting taken care of. And it's why it's fun to be able to do a lot of things. Like, oh, you know, today all it needs is like a little bit of crazy piano for 8 bars.
Mm-hmm.
Some days, maybe you're the person who knows what it should be on all the instruments, and it's faster to just play it than try to describe to other people.
Sure.
Some days, you don't play anything, and you sit back and you get a free concert. The misunderstanding is because of this, you know, stupid archetype.
Nothing is good enough for people.
Who's your hero as producer, if you...
I think Chris Thomas, who is not very well known, but he was an assistant at Abbey Road. And when George Martin would go away on vacation, he was actually producing Beatle records, although he didn't get credit for it at the time. Then in the early 70s, when he went independent, he produced, well, let's see, he produced a Salty Dog for Procol Harum.
Mm-hmm.
He produced a number of the early Roxy Music records, the second and the fifth one, notably, and the early Brian Ferry solo records, 70s Badfinger records, John Cale's Paris 1919.
Great record.
Beautiful record. Then he goes on to produce all the early Pretenders records, produces Nevermind the Bollocks, Here's the Sex Pistols. In the 80s, goes on to produce a couple of the huge In Excess records. In the 90s, did Pulp's Different Class. Most recently was working with U2. And what I adore about him is when you look at the trajectory of his career, he doesn't have a sound. The only thing is, qualitatively, it's always really good. There's always a very clear picture of what's going on. And it sounds like that artist at their best. If you put on the second Roxy Music record, it's what you want.
That's
you
as know, good as it gets.
Yeah, you hear Editions of You or something like that, you know, or Do the Strand, it's just like, yes!
Well, I'm here looking through an old picture frame, just waiting for the perfect view. I hope something special will step into my life. Another fine edition of you. A pin-up done in shades of blue.
Chris Thomas, okay, here. Mixed Here Come the Warm Jets with Eno. Mixed Dark Side of the Moon.
Right.
Now, think about this career-wise. He made Nevermind the Bollocks.
Yeah.
Okay, if you had only done that, basically your name should be hallowed. But you think about them and how much they hated Pink Floyd and the Beatles.
Right, Johnny Rotten wearing an I Hate Pink Floyd t-shirt.
When hated.
Right.
It's like our music is a reaction against that. We do not want to be that. We do not want to be associated with it. Mm-hmm. And he's like, right on. Hey, did I mention I made the White Album?
That's great.
What do you say you play us some music? That's John Bryan with his song Knock Yourself Out from the I Heart Huckabees soundtrack, live on Sound Opinions back in 2006. After a short break, John Bryan explains the difference between songs and performances. And later, we'll review the new album from R&B singer Emily Sandé. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
I'm just a little person, one person in a sea.